This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes.
We want to do is to replenish the Social Security Trust Fund.
The nasty end of debates between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Why does Marco Rubio still plan to vote for Donald Trump?
Expecting a Clinton victory, President Obama and others are looking down ballot.
It's anything but a pro-sower amendment.
A PR crisis for the Amendment 1 campaign after this leaked audio reveals a possible hidden agenda.
Solar polls very well. To the degree that we can use a little bit of political jujitsu.
And when it comes to protecting Florida's waterways, environmental officials say the state outshines all else.
When I tell other states, you know, that I interact with, they are flabbergasted that we do that, that we have that ability to really force change.
A special panel discussion on Florida's waterways coming up on episode 81 of The Rotunda.
From everything I see, has no respect for this person.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of
the United States. No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear you won't admit
no,
that the Russians have engaged in cyber attacks.
Welcome to the program, and that's
States
it, folks. The end of the nasty debates between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. All you have left is to see them on the campaign trail in the final days before November 8th. And I cannot wait, but I'm also worried. What happens next? In this unprecedented election cycle, will people come together? Will there be unrest? As we count down the days, early voting is already underway in Florida, and as it stands, Hillary Clinton has a sizable lead against Donald Trump. As a result, it appears the Clinton campaign is relaxing their efforts in the Sunshine State just a little. Top surrogates like Bill Clinton are bouncing around. Clinton herself is expected to make at least one visit this week, and Donald Trump will ramp things up with a rally in Tallahassee.
Marco Rubio did not accept that sea levels are rising, and if you're watching TV or you are going down some of the blocks right here in Miami in the middle of a sunny day and you see the ocean coming up through the streets, how can you deny what is right in front of you? I thought he was from Miami.
President Obama made a stop in South Florida recently and pretty much slammed Senator Marco Rubio for continuing to support Trump.
Marco Rubio said this was a dangerous con artist who spent a lifetime, spent a career sticking it to working people. Now, that begs the question, since we're in Florida, why does Marco Rubio still plan to vote for Donald Trump? Why is he supporting Donald Trump?
After everything Trump has said and done, including calling Marco little Marco, it appears Mr. Obama won't let it slide.
The point is, you deserve leaders who show up to work, who do their homework, who care more about you than about just hanging on to their job, who will have your back. That is who Hillary Clinton is. That's who Patrick Murphy is.
Mr. Obama is attempting to capitalize on Trump's tarnished image to help Rubio's rival, Patrick Murphy, who is either closely trailing or in a dead heat, to take over Rubio's Senate seat. Many wonder if Rubio is just setting himself up for another run for president. Remember, he said he wouldn't run for re-election, and he changed his mind. So, should we believe him now? Patrick Murphy has been raising that as a concern, and the hosts on News Radio 970 WFLA asked Rubio to respond.
Senator, you're running for re-election. How can we be sure that if you get re-elected, you're going to serve a complete term and not run again in 2020 for president?
Well, first of all, because I've said it, not only am I going to serve for 6 years, I've been honest with people. I want the things I wanted to achieve. Some may take longer than 6 years to achieve. That's what my focus is on 100%. If I wanted to run for something else, I wouldn't have run for Senate. My opponent keeps saying I'm going to run for president. If I wanted to run for president in 4 years, I would have just stayed out of this race and started running on November the 9th, which was a lot of other people are going to do. I wouldn't have run for re-election at the last minute in the toughest swing state in the country.
So that's something to watch for, including how much more money Tom Murphy Jr. will keep donating to keep his son's chances alive. His son, Patrick Murphy. Fascinating. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. So let's drill down to some other Florida news. Later in the program, we'll take another look at Florida's environment with a discussion on what makes the Sunshine State unique compared to the rest of the country. Our special guests are Drew Bartlett, who is the Deputy Secretary for Water Policy and Ecosystem Restoration, and Rich Budell, Executive Director of the Florida Agribusiness Council. Stay tuned for that. But first, when it comes to the rest of the ballot, of the four amendments listed, a couple, actually all of them, will leave you scratching your heads. I recommend reading each carefully. Do some research before choosing yes or no. Here's why. There's renewed questions about the motives behind Amendment 1, titled Rights of Electricity Consumers Regarding Solar Energy Choice. Take a listen to this leaked audio supplied by the Miami Herald and Tampa Bay Times of Sal Nuzzo, a policy director at the James Madison Institute, which is a conservative research think tank here in Tallahassee.
Solar polls very well. To the degree that we can use a little bit of political jujitsu and take what they're kind of hitting us on and use it to our benefit, either in policy and legislation or in constitutional referendums, if that's the direction we want to take, use the language of promoting solar and kind of put in these protections for consumers that kind of choose not to install rooftop.
Caught on tape, Nuzzo appears to be detailing the strategy of the utility-backed amendment pushed by Consumers for Smart Solar. Armed with more than $21 million in utility industry financing, they were successful in raising the required amount of signatures to make the ballot, while the solar industry-backed group, Floridians for Solar Choice, came up short.
Consumers for Smart Solar not only conducted the research, but then also, in what I would consider an incredibly savvy maneuver, they put forth their own constitutional ballot initiative. That ballot initiative also gathered the 700,000 signatures.
The backlash from this audio release was swift. Newspapers around the state were already urging people to vote against the amendment, but opponents feared the carefully crafted language would dupe people into voting yes anyway.
I've been against it from the beginning. It was described by the several of the justices on the Supreme Court very aptly when they described it as a wolf in sheep's clothing, and that's exactly what I think it is. It's anything but a pro-sower amendment.
That's State Senator Jack Latvala, who's currently busy in a vigorous fight to defeat one of the other amendments, Amendment 2, the very popular medical marijuana amendment, which has significant support from Floridians. But with the latest revelations, he says he knew all along that Amendment 1 was just a flat-out attempt to trick Florida voters.
What's written in the amendment, in most cases, is current law. We gain absolutely nothing with that amendment. What is not current law is an expanded, you know, ability of local governments to mess around with people who have solar. The potential for the net metering to be changed so that people don't have a guarantee of being able to sell the extra energy that their solar system produces back into the power company's grid. It's a bad amendment. It's a trick amendment.
Again, here's Sal Nuzzo explaining on that leaked audio how the amendment could cost non-solar utility customers more money.
What they don't have the right to do is generate their utilities for their when the sun is out and receive utilities from traditional utilities while shifting costs onto other ratepayers. So it essentially negated exactly what the challenge was and what the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and Tom Steyer and all of these other folks were after.
In full disclosure, the James Madison Institute has been a sponsor of the Rotunda. I reached out for comment on this story and was issued a statement on behalf of its president and CEO, Dr. Bob McClure. It reads in part, JMI has never worked with or received funding from Consumers for Smart Solar. We have released policy positions on both solar amendments and have publicly spoken on the pros and cons of each. At an event with an unfamiliar national audience, Mr. Nuzzo generalized his commentary and misspoke in reference to JMI partnering with Consumers for Smart Solar in any capacity. JMI has played no role in their efforts. The Institute does have strong opinions about both amendments, which were expressed in this recording, ones that we would repeat all over again if given the opportunity. That's a statement from the CEO, Dr. Bob McClure, of the James Madison Institute. Sarah Bascom, who is the spokesperson for Consumers for Smart Solar, issued a statement saying the Institute doesn't speak for Consumers for Smart Solar, and Nuzzo's comments about Amendment 1 are simply not true. Again, Senator Jack Leadvalla.
I personally believe that the voters are smart enough to reject this effort, and I don't think it'll pass.
You're listening to The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Thanks for keeping this program in your queue. We enjoy tracking the people and issues shaping Florida politics. As you know, this is a nonpartisan program where all views are welcomed. To keep up on the latest news and information, visit rotundapodcast.com. We have some exciting things in store for you in the upcoming legislative session. You won't want to miss any of it. Visit rotundapodcast.com for the latest. And again, thanks for your support. Lately, we've been gathering experts for roundtable discussions on some of the most pressing issues facing Florida, and the environment is always at the top of the list.
I think there will always be critics, no matter how successful our programs are or what tack our programs take. There will always be some portion of the population that will be critical that it isn't enough.
When it comes to the state's waterways, the pace of Everglades restoration is often called into question. Rich Budell is former director of agricultural water policy at the Florida Department of Agriculture.
The challenge that we face in the Everglades is it's the fact that the Everglades footprint is about half of the size that it used to be, and there's no turning back that clock in my mind. We're in a state that continues to grow at the rate of about 300,000 new residents a year, already the third largest. And I just think that there's not as much appreciation for how far we've come over the last 20 or 30 years, because many of the residents in Florida haven't been here that long.
So to help spotlight some of what's being done to protect Florida's waterways, we've gathered two of the best experts to join me at the Capitol 4th Floor Rotunda to help share some of the little-known facts about what the state is currently doing.
My name is Drew Bartlett. I'm the Deputy Secretary for Ecosystem Restoration at the Florida Department of Environmental Protection.
And I'm Rich Budell. I'm the Executive Director of the Florida Agribusiness Council, formerly with the Florida Department of Agriculture for many years.
So Florida's water issues, we are known, we're always in the news for something, but one of the things that's often overlooked is what good is being done here in Florida with regards to the environment. So this program I wanted to tap into and take a closer look at some of the best management practices that's going on here in the state as we talk here in the Capitol Rotunda. So Drew, kick us off. What's good that's happening here in Florida with regards to water quality?
Well, the first thing you really have to start with in Florida is how much its citizenry cares about the environment and cares about water. And so they talk about it, and they talk about how to make sure that we have a good environment here in Florida. And as a result of that, when we see environmental issues, action is taken. One of our biggest challenges in Florida is nitrogen and phosphorus pollution, which can come from human and animal waste and excess fertilizers that get into our waterways and cause a problem. Now, if you look at the Federal Clean Water Act, it basically says set your standards, monitor, and set your restoration goals. But it doesn't go much beyond that. And that's what most states follow. But this state said, let's go beyond that. Let's fix our waterways. Let's establish in law a Basin Management Action Plan process where the Florida Department of Environmental Protection can engage all the local entities and craft a plan fund a plan to reduce pollution in our waterways where we see it. And we had that issue in springs, and we had that issues in certain lakes like Lake Okeechobee and certain estuaries like the Indian River Lagoon, St. Lucie Estuary, and Coosa-Hatchee Estuary. Significant investment is happening, hundreds of millions of dollars every year to try to control sources, treat water, and make sure those waterways are improving.
Rich Budell, so what are your thoughts on where we are here in Florida as regards to the state of our water quality and what we're doing to safeguard it?
I think that the foundation that Drew mentioned in Florida law is probably as comprehensive and as strong as any state's in the nation. His reference to the Basin Management Action Plan program, I think, is a very novel approach to putting the funds and the priorities toward critical resources to restore those waters, protect and restore Florida's waters. One of the tools that is ingrained in Florida law is to engage both urban and agricultural land uses in the development and implementation of best management practices. And they're not rocket science. I mean, these are, you know, they are science-based practices that are focused on controlling nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus, at the source. How do we keep those elements or those compounds in the areas where they're intended to benefit either the urban or the agricultural environment? And so the things that we do are our nutrient management planning and irrigation system upgrades to control the amount of water that's irrigated on the land. Nutrients tend to move with water. So if you can control the water and keep the water in the root zone, you keep the nutrients in the root zone where the plants can use them. The other big issue that we face in Florida is the weather and the unpredictability of the weather. And rainfall is a very significant component of stormwater runoff that can carry nutrients into our water bodies. So one of the major focuses of the agriculture industry particularly is stormwater management. How do we try to control the amount of water that lands on the ground and prevent it from rushing into rivers and lakes and streams? So we really focus on that aspect, rehydrating the watershed that's been drained in the past so that it can be used by man for agriculture or development.
I'll ask you both to give some examples of what's being done right. What are the best management practices that we can look to that's unique here in Florida compared to the rest of the country?
When you say best management practices, that's generally referred to for agricultural operations and them doing best management practices, but it's not just agriculture that we need to work on. The unique thing about Florida is when we adopted the Basin Management Action Plan, it's an enforceable plan. And so agricultural entities are expected to implement those best management action plans, and if they don't, the Department of Environmental Protection comes out there with enforcement actions to get them to comply. When I tell other states, you know, that I interact with, they are flabbergasted that we do that, that we have that ability to really force change. And so it's an important process. And I'll let Rich tell you about those specific BMPs, but we as a department also go after discharges. You know, if they have excess nutrient in their discharges or a spray field that's impacting waterways, we'll tell them they have to reduce those. And then we also have to look at, you know, watershed management. You know, are we draining waterways for flood control in a manner that harms the downstream water body? And if so, we need to invest in infrastructure to capture and treat that before it gets there. There's no source that goes untouched in this program.
Interesting fact, if you count forestry, almost half the state is in agriculture. That is a huge part of the state's landscape.
But a very small fraction of that is irrigated. Only about 12% of that acreage is irrigated because that's where the irrigation water is applied. That's where the nutrients are applied. And our focus, as Drew mentioned, is the nutrient enrichment aspect of our restoration strategy. So one of the things that we really focus on is making sure that landowners justify their application of nutrients. And a typical best management practice would be soil testing or tissue testing to determine what the nutrient content of the soil or the crop is, mm-hmm. and using those data to justify additional applications.
So, Drew, one of the things that you mentioned, and to reiterate and make clear that makes us unique, is we have enforcement power here mm-hmm. in Florida and a legal framework to really maintain what we have been doing and what we will continue to do.
So we have a great example in the Lower St. John's River. It's the river that goes through Jacksonville, where we adopted a Basin Management Action Plan in 2008, required all the discharges to reduce their levels, required agriculture to implement BMPs, stormwater discharges to be controlled. There used to be what we termed the green monster that would show up every year on the St. John's River, and that's basically an algae bloom that sort of is very prevalent in the river and smells and is not, you know, desirable at all to anybody boating on the river. Since we adopted that Basin Management Action Plan, we've had 90%+ of the pollution reduced. And so we're almost there. We have not seen that green monster in years. And part of that whole process was we had to look around and make sure everyone was doing their part. We had some instances where some stormwater controls weren't being implemented. We had to send non-compliance letters to some municipalities. But we also did an investigation of all the agriculture operations. We worked with Department of Agriculture to figure out who's doing their job and who's not. And we narrowed down a list of about 8 operations that applied nutrients that weren't doing their job, sent them non-compliance letters. They got into compliance really quick. So all this all adds up, everyone doing their part to get rid of those nuisance algae blooms that nobody wants.
Overall, as we wrap up, where do we stand with Florida and our water and how we take care of our aquifer, our water system, the springs, lakes? How do we compare to the rest of the country?
We have our challenges just like the rest of the country does, and so we've still got work to do. Our spring systems, you know, that has been, over the last 5 to 10 years, real development to try to figure out how to reduce pollution in our springs. Fortunately, we know how to do it, so it's just a matter of making it happen, which takes septic system replacement, it takes a wastewater treatment plant, it takes investment in agricultural infrastructure. All these things need to happen. Last year, the legislature signed a law saying we're giving $50 million a year to DEP to make all that happen until it's done. There's no end point to $50 million a year. Same thing with South Florida and the Indian River Lagoon Estuary, the St. Lucie Estuary, and the Everglades. $200 million a year for infrastructure investment. Let me tell you, when I go to other states, like, you know, Alabama, for example, I talked to Lance. I said, so they just gave me $250 million a year for these two issues. He's like, I get $1 million, you know. And so there's just a passion in Florida, a passion to fix these things, a passion to invest in them that just doesn't exist in other states.
All right. Final thoughts?
I'd like to focus a little bit more on the Everglades that Drew mentioned. You know, there's a huge agricultural component to the footprint that makes up the headwaters of the Everglades. And some of that's north of Lake Okeechobee and some of it is south of Lake Okeechobee. The best management practice program that's been employed south of the lake in what's called the Everglades Agricultural Area is quite possibly the best example of an effective best management practice program probably in the world. They've more than doubled the nutrient load that it was their expectation and was their requirement in law over the last 20 years. They've prevented, you know, thousands of tons of phosphorus from entering the stormwater treatment areas and the water conservation areas and ultimately Everglades National Park. It's a classic example of a partnership between the state and regional government, the South Florida Water Management District being the sponsor of a lot of that activity, and private landowners in those agricultural areas, you know, binding together, finding what the best science indicates the practices should be, and then implementing them across the landscape and measuring through water quality monitoring the benefit that those practices have accrued to the state. And it's a classic success story.
All right. So Drew Bartlett and Rich Budell, thank you so much for joining me here on The Rotunda. I really appreciate your time.
Good talking to you, Matt.
That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Senator Jack Latvala. Also, Drew Bartlett with the Florida Department of Environmental Protection and Rich Budell with the Florida Agribusiness Council. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com. Take a moment to fill out our listener survey and be sure to join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.